You may proceed. Thank you.
I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You may.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Jesse Nairn. I represent Lynchburg General Hospital and Century Insurance, their workers' compensation insurance carrier, in this appeal. This is not the biggest record that your honors have seen, and the facts are not in dispute. Mr. Foster was a paramedic working for Lynchburg General Hospital on July 1st, 2016, while assisting with a lumbar puncture, passed out, struck his head on the ground, had a very serious injury. The issue before the Workers' Compensation Commission is whether or not the facts of this case give rise to a compensable accident. Certainly, the incident occurred in the course of his employment. He was at work when it happened. The issue is, does it arise out of his employment? The evidence in this case, primarily the medical evidence, is insufficient to establish that Foster's incident arose out of his employment. The majority of the full commission incorrectly relied on inferences to establish the cause of the claimant's incident. The medical record doesn't speak to the cause. There's no evidence as to the cause.
Counsel, isn't there a nurse's record that does indicate about the vasovascular incident that was the cause of the fall?
I think, Your Honor, absolutely. There is medical evidence that indicates that he fell due to a vasovagal incident. Or a vasovagal situation. The question is, what caused that vasovagal situation? That's the issue.
But can't that, in combination with his own testimony about feeling lightheaded, be something the commission could consider?
Certainly they could consider it, Your Honor. But I think the errors that they made is that they made an inference and, in their own opinion, outlined items that they said weren't there that were there, and vice versa.
But you use the term inference, and I think the commission actually said the medical records at the very least establish a correlation between the claimant's observation of the lumbar puncture procedure and his reaction. Left to our consideration, according to the commission, whether on these facts the correlation is preponderating evidence of causation. So it seems to me that the commission suggested more than just an inference, that they found correlation, and it might be differences in degree, but that's a little bit more preponderating than just saying there's an inference, isn't it?
Well, I think that the majority's opinion absolutely says that what you spoke to, and I think that the dissent and the deputy commissioner that heard the case...
Who had it right.
Yes, sir. This case has been in front of 4 judges, and it's 2-2 right now. That's why we're here. It may be a matter of semantics, but I think that the issue is that the medical records simply establish when it happened. Nobody disagrees when it happened. It happened sometime after 7 a.m. on July 1st, 2016. The medical records don't establish why it happened. And in this case...
You cited the case that I think is probably a pretty good analogy. It's the Dishman case. It's
yes,
one
sir.
Of the cases that you cited. But in the Dishman case, didn't the individual in Dishman essentially say that he had no idea what happened and so therefore it must have been the cause of this, as opposed to here there's a direct statement from the claimant that he knows what happened?
Well, Your Honor, I think Dishman, the claimant testified about a lot of things. He said that his palms were sweaty, that he heard all these things, that it made him feel bad, and when he stood up, he passed out. And the medical records were, in that case, again, silent as to what caused him to pass out. The full commission, again, that's not a court of appeals case, but the full commission cited that and said that wasn't enough. Although, in that case, the security guard officer who was in that case had no experience in the medical realm, in the medical arena. In this case, the claimant was a firefighter, EMT, paramedic. And while his testimony was that in the past, he had assisted in these lumbar puncture procedures, I think 5 to 12 times was his testimony, and that sometimes he had had these lightheaded feelings in the past, his testimony was also that he'd been an EMT, paramedic, firefighter for over 12 years. He had seen sights far worse than needles, gruesome sights. He had himself administered IVs, which are big needles. He himself, his testimony is, administered thousands of shots, all involving needles. His testimony before the deputy commissioner was that he wasn't sure if he actually saw the needle go into the patient or not. The tray was set up. He was there in front of the patient.
And he passed out at some point.
And he passed out. Your Honor, his testimony that he had felt lightheaded, I guess because he saw the needle, isn't borne out by the rest of the evidence, and that's the problem in the case. He testified to administering thousands of shots in his jobs, IVs, which are big, thick needles that have to draw blood out of people. See, as a firefighter, seeing car accidents, gruesome sights, body parts, bones extruding from skin, having no problems with that. His testimony also, Your Honor, is that in the past, when assisting with these lumbar procedures, he didn't always have problems with lightheadedness. And so what the full commission, the majority of the full commission did, was they took this inference that we knew what time it happened, and we knew that it was a vasovagal reaction, and extrapolated the other testimony to assume that it was because he saw this needle. And that's not enough. Argument, Your Honor, is that that's not enough to carry his burden of proof. It's his burden of proof on these issues, and that evidence doesn't preponderate.
But I appreciate your point, but when we're dealing with these kinds of cases and the standard of review, I would suggest that quite likely if the commission had found that the facts did not support the result that you argue, you would be saying standard of review applies, commission had the opportunity to consider the facts, and so therefore we're stuck with the determination made by the commission. But for whatever reason, here the commission evaluated the evidence and made a determination based upon what it heard that there was enough correlation, there was enough causation proven to establish the burden of proof.
Well, Your Honor, and that issue, the burden of proof, did the injury arise out of employment, this court can review de novo. The facts are what they are. Mm-hmm. I can't argue the facts, but I can argue if the commission had sufficient evidence to support their finding of causation. I can, and whether or not the accident arose out of the claimant's employment is a mixed question of law and fact.
But isn't causation, and going back to law school, and it's an interesting argument, going back to law school, we always thought in the terms of causation is a fact determination, whether or not the fact finder can come to the conclusion that this was indeed the proximate cause of the circumstance, whatever circumstance we're evaluating. And whenever we're talking about causation or proximate cause, aren't we typically talking about a fact question left to the fact finder?
The facts that led up to the determination of causation, Your Honor, I can't argue. Mm-hmm. But I can argue, Your Honor, I believe, whether or not the commission had sufficient evidence and sufficient information in front of them to find that causal connection, to take the facts, which are not in dispute, and determine whether or not they had enough to find that causation was established in this case. Is the evidence sufficient to support the commission's determination is a question of law that this court can hear. And our argument, Your Honor, is that the evidence wasn't sufficient to find his burden of proof on causation. That it simply wasn't enough. On the issue of the claimant's testimony, his evidence of feeling lightheaded in the past, as I've already pointed out, he had testified to having prior examples of doing this procedure and not having any physical symptoms, while in other times having feeling lightheaded is what his testimony was. It's important, Your Honor, to also point out that the recorded statement taken by the insurance carrier 10 days after the incident, where the claimant admitted he felt okay and was okay to give the report statement, makes no mention of the lumbar puncture needle. He makes no mention of seeing the needle as any reason to think that that's what caused him to pass out or had any interaction with why he passed out. And that's evidence before this court and was evidence before the full commission as well.
Counsel, did he suffer from various other health issues?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There's also a slew. The full commission, majority of the full commission, makes an argument that there was not any other likely causes, so we're going to go with what their argument was, that he saw this needle and caused him to pass out. That's simply not the case. The claimant suffered from Kawasaki's disease, which is a heart disease. The evidence in the medical records established he'd been diagnosed with that as a child and had that for a long time. He also had food allergies to the point where he had to carry an EpiPen with him.
But, Counsel, where were the linking of the Kawasaki's disease and the food allergies to the possibility that this was the causation of the event?
Isn't
that more speculative?
Well, it's the claimant's burden of proof, Your Honor.
No, I understand, but I'm just, you're indicating there are these other things. There's nothing else in the record except for these bare facts about the fact that he suffered from these symptoms or diseases, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Just as if there's nothing other than bare facts that he was staying in a room at 7 o'clock in the morning and he passed out. There's no other additional evidence to show in the medical records, which, again, I think another important point here is, in their brief, counsel for Foster outlines the Strictly Stump case as law from this court that establishes that you don't have to have a medical record that establishes causation. And certainly that's the law of Virginia. The big difference in Strictly Stump in this case is, in Strictly Stump, a tree fell on a man's leg. That's an obvious thing that happened, that people testified, they saw it. He testified, the tree fell on my leg. And then I went to the doctor, and while the medical records didn't say I'm treating him because the tree fell on his leg, the court certainly put one and two together. In this case, there is no physical injury. Certainly, there's the physical injury after he fell. There's no dispute about what happened after he fell. But there's no physical injury that caused him to fall down that way. And so the court is left to wonder why. And our argument, Your Honor, is that there wasn't evidence to support the inference as to the why, and that the why arose out of the claimant's employment on July 1st, 2016. Getting back to Your Honor's questions about other issues, there's evidence in the case that a vasovagal reaction can occur due to dehydration, heart issues, sudden reactions to things. Claimant didn't eat breakfast that morning. There's no evidence that he had anything to drink that morning. Just because the claimant says, I didn't feel like I was dehydrated, doesn't mean medically he wasn't dehydrated. I think an important point that the full commission majority opinion seems to gloss over is that in the blood panels that were taken after the after he was hospitalized, his glucose level was very high. There's no explanation for it. There's no necessary, as Your Honor points out, there's no necessarily medical evidence that points to that could be the cause or that could be the reason. But the full commission majority in their opinion says there are no other explanations in the record to explain what could have happened. And that's just not true. There are a myriad of other options. The important point also being, though, that it's the claimant's burden of proof to prove by preponderance of the evidence that the incident arose out of his employment. It's not the employer and carrier's burden to prove a bunch of other alternate theories. Although there were a number of alternate theories presented to the court, which the full commission opinion just kind of glosses over. I think, Your Honors, it's also very important that the claimant's job and what he did for a living can't be ignored. And the fact that he experiences needles and deals with needles on a daily basis, likely, if not very frequently, his own testimony, thousands of shots. The inference to be made, I think, in the facts of this case are, how could it be that viewing this needle on this day after he's done it thousands of times in the past without issue caused him to pass out? We don't know. The problem in this case for Mr. Foster is we don't know why he passed out. And the court erroneously made an inference that because he was there and because he was assisting with the procedure and he had a vasovagal reaction and passed out, it arose out of his employment. As the Deputy Commissioner and Commissioner Rappaport stated in their, in the opinion and in the dissent, all the medical evidence does in this case is outline the timing, when it happened. It never speaks to why it happened. And the full commission's majority opinion is flawed in that they outline issues that they think were lacking from the record, which were there, namely other possible causes. And they don't take into consideration the full record. They latch on to he was there, he says he felt a little lightheaded, next thing you know he's passed out, he suffered this horrible accident. Where there are, but the import being, this was something internally happened that caused this man to pass out that day. And we can't, this isn't a tree that fell on him. We can't know why it happened unless there's medical evidence that says why. There's no medical evidence in this case that says why it happened.
Thank you, counsel. Do you have about a minute and a half? Do you want to keep that for
you? No, Your Honor. We would just ask that the full commission decision be reversed and Foster's claim be denied.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court, my name is Patrick Avenue. I represent Zach Foster in connection with his workers' compensation claim in this appeal. Your Honors, very respectfully, the standard of review in this case isn't whether or not there's sufficient evidence for the commission's finding. The standard of review is whether or not credible evidence exists in the record to support the commission's factual
finding. I'm glad you said that, counsel, because there's a Goodyear Tire case out of the Supreme Court of Virginia, which basically goes to that point, says if there is no credible evidence to support the commission's finding of fact, that its findings are not binding on the court, and the question of the sufficiency of the evidence becomes one of law. And what has been suggested by your opponent colleague is that we have some circumstances, but we don't have a connection between the circumstances and the claim for relief. What would you point to in the record to support the conclusion that there is enough evidence to support the basis for your client's injury?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll respond like this. I did hear Mr. Nair indicate that this incident happened sometime after 7 a.m. and sort of vaguely indicate when it happened. the facts are actually, in terms of Mr. Foster's testimony, are far more robust than that. And indeed, his testimony was considered credible. The commission, both the deputy commissioner and the full commission, called his testimony credible. What Mr. Foster testified to was he woke up from the surgery on July 1, 2016. When I asked him the question at the hearing, what was the last thing that he remembered before he woke up? He said, I felt lightheaded. He said his vision narrowed and went black. That was at the very time that he was looking at the needle. It's important for us to understand, too, what Foster testified to about that needle. This just wasn't just any needle. This wasn't just the same kind of needles he would use in his EMT job or as a firefighter. He testified this is a big needle. And he testified that in doing this specific procedure, the lumbar puncture procedure, in the past, he said he had done it between a half dozen and a dozen times in the past. And not just sometimes did he experience lightheadedness when he did that procedure, but a majority of the times he experienced lightheadedness.
Let me take your factual circumstances and state it a way to maybe help you maybe understand your opponent colleague's argument. Suppose a person is driving down the road, okay, and the last thing they see is a car coming from their right. That's the last thing that they recall. The next thing they know, they're waking up and they're in the hospital and they've been injured. But it turns out that actually that last car that they saw had nothing to do with the accident. It was actually someone that struck them from behind or broadsided them or something like that. You still have to prove the link between the responsible party, and the responsible party in my hypothetical is the person who broadsided and not necessarily the last person he saw. How would you distinguish your situation from that?
Your Honor, I would distinguish the situation from the fact that he did experience some of these kind of symptoms in the same lumbar procedure in the past. And if we move into the medical record a little bit, we see that on July 8th, 7 days later, Dr. Elagala had a nurse practitioner named Ms. Rosa. She indicated that this was a vasovagal reaction. Okay. Foster testified, and in that part of the note, he's talking about the history of the event. Okay, so she calls this a vasovagal reaction. Foster testified about what he was talking to her about when she was taking down that record. And he was telling her about the incident itself, about his lightheadedness, about the blurry vision. And he credibly testified to that. So when you combine what he's talking to her about when she takes that note, and then that she actually calls it a vasovagal reaction, which is, by definition, a vasovagal reaction is an overreaction to some stimuli. In thinking about what the appellant has written about what a vasovagal reaction is and that there are sometimes other causes to it, you have to, in order to get there, you have to ignore what the primary definition of a vasovagal reaction is. It is an overreaction to a particular stimulus. So if we put those pieces together and we say, at the time of this incident, Foster experienced what he experienced, and then we say, 7 days later, he's talking about that with his medical provider. She calls it a vasovagal reaction, an overreaction to some stimuli. She calls it that in the context of him telling her about what happened to him. I would submit to you that is the medical evidence in this case. I would submit to you that that in itself, when we combine his credible testimony with her indication that this was a vasovagal reaction, that that does reach the level of causation in this case. Now, I think that the facts independently, I mean, his testimony can independently support finding that this arose out of, that the vasovagal reaction was caused by viewing the needle, and that's sufficient. The Strictly Stumps case, I think it is actually similar here in the simplicity of the actual injury. The injury in Strictly Stumps was one that was viewable. It was one that where there was a fracture injury and there was witnesses to it. This is actually simple. This is not a cardiac event. This is not a stroke. This was a simple fainting incident. And so I would submit that the simplicity of the incident is very similar. And the principle of law that we derive from Strictly Stumps is that in those situations where the medical condition is actually pretty simple, we don't need an expert to tell us that he fainted because of the needle.
Counsel, I think one of the things that appellant's counsel was pointing out is there's a factual difference between this case and Simply Stump, which is essentially but there was a point where they could pinpoint the tree falling and hitting the claimant and simply stump. Whereas here, I'm helping with this, and there's no indication of the needle or any indication about what it is with the specific procedure that comes before the fainting episode. Do you want to speak to that? Because I think that's what he's indicating is the crux of the difference between why you don't need the medical testimony in simply stump and why it's something that you do need here and is missing here.
And I think I could only allude to what Foster testified to is what happened when he passed out. He was experiencing similar symptoms to the same procedure that he experienced in the past. That is really his best, in terms of contemporaneous evidence, that is his best evidence. And he is a witness, and he's a credible witness in that regard. Then when you add this to that there is, at least in our interpretation of the evidence, there is medical causation evidence in the July 8, 2016 note from the neurosurgeon's nurse practitioner. So if I address that question, in moving on to just this notion that there are the other likely possibilities of what could have caused the vasovagal reaction, Foster credibly testified that the day before this, he was normal, that he slept normal, that he wasn't hungry. He didn't eat breakfast, but he also testified that he never eats breakfast. This is just his normal routine. There was nothing abnormal about this day at all. He testified that the Kawasaki disease wasn't an issue. It wasn't one for which that he had had any significant symptoms for in years, maybe even since he was a child. He was treated by a neurosurgeon. He had brain surgery. You know, if a brain surgeon thought that they needed to do more diagnostic tests for an underlying condition, he was treated by the neurosurgeon and the nurse practitioner for a period of time. There's just no evidence that there was any real concern about what the nature of the vasovagal reaction was beyond what he testified to and beyond what he actually told the nurse practitioner on July 8, 2016. So there aren't any other likely causes established in the record for this vasovagal reaction. His testimony does establish certainly a temporal relationship between the vasovagal reaction and viewing the needle. And we believe that the medical evidence does support a finding of medical causation. That's really our case. And I'm happy to address trying to distinguish other cases if you wish.
Thank you,
counsel. Thank you.
Mr. Nairn, I think you have a minute and a half. Excuse me, I stand corrected. It's a minute 23.
As you're walking up, before the clock even starts, I'm going to give you a question to think about, because I was listening to your opponent colleague's argument, and he talked about vasovagal reaction. I'm thinking to myself, okay, I think I understand what the concept means. I don't like bridges. When I get close to a bridge, I have to make a decision, a tactical decision as to whether I'm going to drive 50 miles out of the way or I'm going to go over that bridge. And when my wife's with me, she knows I don't like bridges. And when we get close to one, particularly Chesapeake Bay Bridge, she says, sweetheart, are you going to be able to drive over this thing today? And I'll say, no, I'm not going to be able to do it. Some days, maybe I can do it. And I think his argument, and this is when the clock can start, is that what may affect a person one day may not necessarily affect the person another day. So seeing the needles on a particular day may be okay, but on a certain day, because of circumstances, it can affect an individual. And there's some days where I have no problem driving over the bridge. If I've got a good song on the radio or something that excites me that I'm thinking about, I don't even think about the bridge. But if I start thinking about the fact that I'm 100 feet in the air and a steel projectile, I'm not very happy. So what do you do with that situation?
Your Honor, I think that the problem for Mr. Foster in that argument is that the causation argument can't be based on conjecture and speculation, and it's his burden of proof, and his argument that some days I was good with this, some days I wasn't good with this, that day there's no medical evidence to say why. The only evidence as to why is the claimant's own testimony that he felt lightheaded and dizzy. Could have felt lightheaded and dizzy because he was dehydrated. Could have felt lightheaded and dizzy.
Didn't he say in reaction to the needle, didn't he suggest that that was the component that made him get to where he was?
That was a suggestion, Your Honor, absolutely.
And don't we have cases that say we could rely on the testimony of a claimant in that type of medical situation, quasi-medical situation?
Your Honor, I think there's cases that you can rely on a claimant in the absence of medical records. The argument here is that, Your Honor, because of the type of injury here, the internal injury, there has to be some medical evidence as to why. Your Honor, I see that my time is given up. I'm happy to finish the answer.
Please finish.
Okay. The important part of this case, Your Honor, is that we don't know why he passed out. And his testimony that he felt lightheaded, or he felt lightheaded because he saw the needle, flies in the face of his own testimony that he'd seen needles, he'd administered needles thousands of times, he'd been in an ENT, he'd been a paramedic. And if on that day he saw the needle and that's what caused him to pass out, then there has to be medical evidence that supports that contention in order for the claimant to carry his burden of proof, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise.